This is a React podcast. I'm Chantastic. Today we have a great episode with Christina Holland. I was really excited to sit down with her and hear about how she's moved her entire development process into the cloud. This is something that I've tried over and over again, but have never gotten quite right and have never been totally comfortable with. And I had so many questions, and she has the answers for us. If you have wanted to move more of your work into the cloud and worry less about the machines and maintaining and provisioning your box, this is a great episode for you. I'm really excited to share it with you, and we will dive in right after a word from our sponsor. This episode of React Podcast is brought to you by React Training. They provide hands-on, in-person training for development teams taught by community leaders and experts. For more information, visit reacttraining.com. Christina, thank you so much for joining me on this show today.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me.
So we're at ReactConf 2018, and you had a really compelling talk where you developed a to-do list with a couple twists. One, it was gamified, and two, you did it all in the cloud, which is pretty ambitious. You didn't really download anything to make the app run to your computer. Is that right?
Yeah. All I had on my computer was the browser, Chrome OS. It's a Chromebook, factory Chromebook, without Christini, without the Linux installed. So that's the only possible way I could have done it.
That's so crazy. So you were using that Chromebook on stage?
Yep.
So that's like pretty ambitious. Were you nervous?
I was extremely nervous. In fact, like the day before that I was practicing, Node just came out with version 11.
Oh, no.
And I had been NVM install Node, which installs latest. And one of my dependencies doesn't work with Node 11. So it was hanging. I couldn't figure out why. And I was like, oh, if this happens on stage, I'm screwed.
All of the demos that I've seen that fail on stage are because of internet connection.
Yeah, really.
So that's very brave of you.
Yeah, but I had no choice because the whole point of my demonstration, as I was telling Sophie during our dry run, is I have to prove that this can be done in 20 minutes quickly.
Yeah.
And that means I have to actually do it. I can't just tell people, here's some video, here's some screenshots, trust me.
Yeah, it doesn't mean as much if you just took videos of you doing it. In the back of everyone's mind is like, oh, well, I couldn't do this because I don't have like a persistent internet connection or like internet's not reliable. And you were able to kind of prove that, like, over the conference Wi-Fi that you could give a talk where you did it.
I gotta confess, I had an Ethernet connection.
Oh!
I would not have trusted conference Wi-Fi for that.
Yeah. We'll go into that, the specifics of the app that you built, in a second. But I just wanted to get a sense of, like, how your experience was talking at ReactConf.
It was really cool. I was really nervous. One of the things I got to admit I like about talking at conferences is I get to feel like a celebrity. And I used to work in the movie business, So I kind of missed that. And
what did you do in the movie business?
I used to work in animation for 10 years.
Oh, cool.
Worked on such movies as Megamind, Madagascar 3, How to Train Your Dragon 2.
Wow. I've watched those with my kids. I've seen your work.
Yeah, my name would be at the end.
So nice.
I missed that.
So you were doing those. What kinds of technology were you using to do those?
There's a software. So I was working on the crowds team, mm-hmm. which is making any scenes that have more than 8 characters in them is how it's defined at DreamWorks.
Interesting.
So there's a software that was developed for Lord of the Rings to do the massive battle scenes, and it's called Massive. And so it's like you create AI characters, and you can, so you build their minds and their brains, and then you instantiate as many as you need, and they kind of do their own thing.
No way.
So it's my job. So I interned there at the company that was started to sell that software. And then I was a consultant for a while, and I taught other clients how to use that software. And then I decided I wanted to work on actual movies myself and get my name in the credits. So I asked to get referred to a company and I started making them. So I worked at the companies building the characters, building their brains and AI, and then hand them off to artists to put them in the shots.
That's so fascinating. We've talked a lot in this first day of ReactConf
talks kind of the idea of like declarative versus imperative. And that seems kind of like a declarative way of programming those scenes of saying like, hey, here's the way you think about the environment. Mm-hmm. Now go do it.
Yeah, the building the brains was really interesting. It was kind of like a state machine, basically. Okay. Like every action would be a pose. So stand would be a pose and walk would be a pose. And then you would have actions that they play as they go between them. So after you set up the tree of motion capture clips and which clips play between which poses, you just tell the character, I want you to walk now, and it'll take whatever steps it needs to get from the current pose to walk. So if it's standing, it'll play stand to walk, and then it'll play the walk loop.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That must be super fun. I mean, to see those things come to life.
Yeah.
And not necessarily know what you're going to get.
Yeah, it's like a lot of people are like, oh, you're doing AI, you're programming things. And I was like, no, it's a UI. I'm just connecting nodes.
So how does that work? Do you do a bunch of takes and then just take the best one? Or
The actual motion capture?
Yeah, the motion capture.
Yeah, yeah. You go to the studio, you have an actor, and you have them do walks very precisely because you have to be able to connect them to each other.
Okay.
So you're like, your step length has to be this long. You have to end on the right foot, stuff like that.
So how then did you transition from that type of animation into web development?
In that job, I've been doing a little bit of coding in Python.
Okay.
To help me manage the files, because all of those files were saved as text files. So you can go in and edit them. And some of the more complicated stuff, it's more easy to do it that way than through the UI. So I was just doing these really sloppy Python scripts to help me do that work. But I didn't really know how to program. I never had any formal programming training. So when the company went belly up and my choice was to uproot my family and move to LA or find a new job, I was like, well, I live in the Bay Area, so, you know, software is never going to go away. So I'll do software, even though I didn't know anything about it. And I was 4 months pregnant.
Wow.
And I was like, that's okay. So what I need to do is I need to, in the next 5 months, learn how to do software and then get a job in about 2 weeks. So yeah, I went to a boot camp for 3 months, had a month left when I finished boot camp. So just kind of crashed all job applications by filling out like 70 something applications in 2 weeks, and then got a bunch of interviews and took the first offer I got because the baby was due.
Yeah. Look, I got to close this deal fast.
Yeah. But it was, I also had a good feeling about the company, and yeah, it was a really good company. Yeah.
That's crazy. So how long ago was that?
About 2.5 years ago.
Nice. So what did you do in that job and what are you focusing on now?
Okay. So in that job, it was a startup called Pepper Data, and we were a B2B business. We sold a service to people who have distributed computing clusters like Hadoop and such, mm-hmm, Spark. And we helped them monitor what was going on in their systems and optimize it. So there's a dashboard. I worked on the dashboard. We used React, and there's a lot of charting involved.
Yeah.
So all of my previous talks have been about charting. So that was a lot of fun. And now I work at Google, and we don't use React on my team. Other people at Google do. And the product I work on is called Keep. It's
okay.
Part of Docs. It is a note-taking app. And
yes,
it's available.
I used it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's available on Android, iOS, and web, and I do web.
Awesome.
Most of our users are on Android.
Well, that's awesome. That's crazy that you were able to make that career shift, and then you're less than 2 years later end up at Google.
Yeah. I guess I have very high expectations of myself,
uh-huh,
because I'm Asian, and I was raised by Chinese parents, and
yeah,
my mom was always, like, I guess her mantra was, you're smarter than this, and you're wasting your potential. So everything I did, I always felt I could do better.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to get those messages of our parents out of our brain.
Yeah, so so yeah, I think a lot of people talk about, like, having imposter syndrome, mm-hmm, and how kind of sets you back, and I guess how white males do better because they have a sense of entitlement,
mm-hmm,
that they feel like they should deserve this job or should be able to do this or that, and they don't get held back by imposter syndrome. So I kind of have the same thing because my mom for example, tells me I should be able to do anything and I'm smarter than everyone else. So when I go apply for a new job, when I go like, can I go into software from animation in 5 months despite not knowing anything? I'm like, of course, because I'm so great. Not really something to be proud of, but.
I mean, in terms of work, I feel like that's a great.
It's handy.
A great quality to have.
It's handy to have the confidence of a white male, as people say.
Yeah. So now your talk that you gave this morning was not at all anything to do with Keep. It was around a to-do app. How did you come up with the idea of gamifying a to-do app?
Well, this is kind of a running joke that to-do apps are the go-to demo and that nobody likes them because they're really boring. So every time people say things like that, I take it as a challenge. It's like, nobody could possibly make a to-do app that could hold my interest. And I'm like, challenge accepted. So I was like, I bet I could. You know, you just have to think out of the box.
Yeah.
So I was like, what could
I
do?
That white male confidence we're talking about.
Yeah. If anyone tells me I can't do something, then I'm like, I bet I could. So, yeah, I was like, how would you do that? Because if you check off, all you can do is check off boxes. I don't want to stack the deck and add other interactions. So if all you can do is check off boxes, then what choice does the player have other than to check off the boxes or not?
Right.
So it's like the player cannot check off the boxes and have to cheat a little bit because the only way this would have an effect is if you put in a time element.
Yes.
So I had to add a clock. So if you don't check off the box by a certain time, something else happens.
I noticed that there was a point where like an angry mob came after you.
Yeah. Well, there's like a plant that I never watered.
Yeah.
And as I continued to not check the plant boxes, it began to rot and then it attracted flies and then I had maggots in my apartment. So
it's not good.
No. Yeah. So it's a lesson, I guess, about something.
Well, goal number one was accomplished. It was very compelling. And the second goal was that you did it all in the cloud.
Yeah.
So tell me about that experience.
So that was kind of inspired actually by starting work at Google, where a lot of the work is done in the cloud. Hmm. And so we SSH into machines. We use a cloud IDE. And at first it was kind of weird because I'm used to the standard development paradigm where you have a MacBook, you get clone stuff onto your hard drive and you run local dev server on your MacBook. If you need a SQL server, you start a SQL server on your MacBook.
Yeah.
At Google, they don't do it that way. And I thought it was kind of weird at first. And then I was like, wait, it's actually kind of cool because I can go home and do this. I can go on another computer and do this. And I can be in the lab or in the classroom and I can go change something at work really quick.
Yeah.
So I was like, this is really cool. And then I was like, I also want to continue working with React on my personal projects because I really like React. But I can't use the Google tools for that because that's my personal projects. And I have this Chromebook and I can't download anything onto it. And I probably shouldn't because it's work machine. So I decided to see what I could do with publicly available services.
Mm-hmm.
Looked around for an IDE and, you know, you're always kind of wary of Amazon because it's the competition.
Sure.
And AWS is notorious for not having a great UI. But I looked around and it was really the best option. I tried some of the free options and they weren't quite as user-friendly, had some UI glitches. Code Anywhere, I think, had a couple of glitches I wasn't too happy about.
Yeah, so what were some of the options that you found? So you have the AWS Cloud9.
Right, Code Anywhere, something called Code Envy,
C-O-D-E-N-V-Y,
which looks like Cod Envy to me, but I think it's supposed to be Code Envy. And I haven't tried that extensively. And there's also something called Glitch.
Yes.
That's a company now. It was put out by a company that used to be called Fog Creek.
Now it's Glitch, right?
Yeah, it's their mission is to make coding easy. And it's a lot like doing the Amazon thing. It has a little more limited features, but it's easier to start up with. It's if you want to just transfer your standard developer workflow into the cloud, that might not be the tool because you got to get used to a new way of thinking about it, but it's pretty cool and it's free. Amazon does charge for the EC2 instance and for the EBS instance that stores your files.
Okay.
But it's like, yeah, I've been practicing all month for this talk, starting up things and developing my own other projects, and it was only $7. So okay. it's not really prohibitive.
Yeah. So when you say you're developing in the cloud, you have Cloud9 as the IDE, but then also you're NPM installing stuff somewhere, right? Like, so you showed us using Create React App.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And so is that where the EC2 instance comes into play?
So when you open up the IDE, you get a shell into the EC2 instance that it has started out for you.
Okay.
And that's the settings for it, the bash RC and all that, that's permanent as long as you keep that instance. Even when the instance shuts down, spins up again, everything you put in your environment persists.
Wow. So what is it like then doing the inspection, like looking at the browser? Is that part of the IDE or do you just visit that EC2 box like by URL?
There's a link directly to it. Okay. In the IDE, you can just click preview running application and it'll open it up for you in a pane. If you don't like seeing it in a tiny pane, there's a little button you can push to open the whole thing up in a new tab. I don't know how to generate that URL. It's like 50 numbers and letters.
Sure.
So I require those buttons. And that's only accessible to the person who is running the IDE. It's not, you can't pass that URL to somebody else and say, take a look.
So there's a level of security that you have in development.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's more or less localhost, except the localhost is the EC2 instance in Amazon US East one somewhere.
So what were the big wins in your mind of using this approach? You mentioned that it's a technique that you use at Google, so you're like comfortable with it. But are there other wins that you found working on personal projects that weren't work-related in this kind of cloud environment?
Oh, yeah. So the environment, it retains its state wherever you go. So even if I'm working on something on one computer and I don't remember to git commit and push, even if I go to another computer, I can log in and stuff is where I put it. I don't know if anybody's ever run into the problem where you use GitHub, but you got to git clone every time you go somewhere new and git pull, and then you're like, oh, I never pushed.
Yes, that is so frustrating. So you can effectively just pick up any computer and start working.
Yes. In fact, theoretically, because it's just a browser, you should be able to do it on an iPad. And I was going to try to demo that. But there's like a little hiccup getting Cloud9 running on iPad of sockets, maybe, or something.
I've tried a number of the kind of code playground, like code bin type things on iPad. And I have had like kind of bizarre difficulties with mobile Safari for whatever reason.
Yeah, it's something about mobile. Yeah, the rest of the workflow is available on the iPad though. So if I want to screw in my Firebase config, I can do that.
So that brings up an interesting question. What are you using for the peripheral services? So we have an editor, we have a box, but what are you using for things like login? What are you deploying to, et cetera?
Right. So all the backend as a service, I've been using Firebase because it's really convenient and not because I'm shilling for Google, which owns it.
It's a good product, though.
Yeah, it is. And it's pretty much the only game in town as far as I can tell since Parse went away.
Yep.
It provides auth, it provides a database, a real-time database. It provides storage for like images and movies and whatever. And it provides hosting that I don't like as much as Netlify.
Okay.
Or now. And it provides cloud functions.
Oh, awesome.
And it also has a ML kit now that lets you set up your app to recognize street signs or faces or whatever.
Really?
That I have not tried yet, but yeah.
That's amazing.
But I see it in the sidebar, so it's there.
So using Firebase, you could set up a whole app.
Yep.
How does the authentication work and storing users and all of that? Is that all baked in as well?
Yeah. So you can you can set up any kind of sign-in, including email and a bunch of OAuth providers like Google, Facebook, Twitter, GitHub, Google Play for some reason. Because Firebase is a lot of it is targeted at mobile apps.
Gotcha. Okay.
So that's like probably
native
why,
mobile apps.
Yeah, that's okay. Probably why the Google Play. Yeah. So you set up those services, and it will take care of everything for you. It'll link them together if they sign in with both email and Google, for example.
That's amazing, because yeah. I've had some experiences where I go to a site and I'll use like Twitter, and then they add GitHub, and I'm like, I can't remember what I used. And then I sign in with GitHub, and now I have two accounts.
Oh, no.
It's like so irritating.
Yeah, so it creates the whole user account, all the stuff you need, display wow. name, grants them a unique UID, and then there's a Firebase UI library that you can use to just put a button on the page for sign-in.
Now, are there competitors in the authentication login space?
Yeah, definitely. That's probably not the primary. Firebase probably doesn't dominate the market for auth. Okay. So two big players I know are Auth0 and Okta.
Okay.
I've heard good things about Auth0, but haven't tried it. I have tried Okta at my previous work, and we did not like it.
Didn't love it. So if you didn't need Firebase, if you were using some other type of backend, could you still use Firebase for auth?
Yeah, it can work independently.
Now, what are some of the other pieces that you had to figure out in order to do this whole cycle in the cloud? You mentioned Now.
Right. So after all of this auth and database stuff set up and you got the localhost running, I mentioned that the preview that you see in the IDE, it has a URL, looks like it's on the internet, but nobody else can see it. And there's a number of steps that Amazon makes available, so you can make it publicly available so other people can see it. But the steps, I went through it in the presentation. It's a very long series of steps that I've not even been able to read through.
Okay.
So public deployment is like something that people can be kind of nervous about. They're like, oh, I just want to show a couple of friends or my coworkers or my teammates. I don't want to make it publicly available to the internet. I don't want to go through the whole deployment thing. So, but Now is actually not very onerous. It's just like one command pretty much.
Yeah.
You just npm install a Now package, and then you type Now, and it deploys. The first time you type Now, it makes you make an account, but that just consists of putting in your email and then checking your email and pushing a button.
Yeah.
And then once that's set, you just type Now, and it'll automatically deploy your app. You didn't even have to build it to the internet and give you a URL, and everybody can see the URL. And every time you type Now hereafter, it'll put up a completely new deployment. So you have a history of every deployment you've ever deployed. And then it lets you do an alias so you can get a human readable name and point it to whatever deployment you want the public to see.
It's so wild. So that's such an amazing product.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been long impressed by the work that they're doing with Now, and a lot of their open source work is really incredible.
Yeah, I mean, deployment went from being like, oh, something I should only do at the end because it's so hard, to like, I'll just do this whenever.
Yeah. Well, and rollbacks just become like, oh, point the alias to this other thing.
Yeah, so Netlify also works like that. It doesn't have that easy one command deploy at the beginning, but it does, and Now also does this, deploys when you push to GitHub master.
Yeah.
And it allows you to have more deployments. And it does, and they're always up. The thing about Now is it spins down when it's inactive and spins up when somebody hits the URL.
I see.
And you can only have 3 instances running at one time.
Crazy. So those seem like some of the joys and some of the great experiences. Were there also bad experiences, poor experiences, things that you felt like you had to worry about that you might not have had to worry about if you did local development?
Yeah, so a couple of things are just not having reliable internet connection all the time. Mm-hmm. You can't really do this on a plane. Some people saw during the demo, when you're developing on Firebase and you leave it open, then it's kind of a security problem. who has your API key and project name can mess around with your Firebase if you haven't set the rules yet.
Did that startle you a little bit?
Yeah, I didn't know what to do with that, but I was like, okay, that's fine.
I remember seeing the first talk I ever saw online about Node was with Ryan Dahl, and he was presenting this idea of Node and opened up a TCP connection whatever, I was like showing everyone how it worked, and immediately people started posting messages to it. So yeah, it's one of those things that I feel like you kind of assume people are just like watching, but like some people are just super quick on the draw and they're like, I see it, and like copy and paste it in and then just start hitting you with to-dos.
Yeah. So that's obviously the worst if you're doing a presentation and people can actually see your code while you're doing it. But even if not, when you're in the cloud, everything that you have is on the cloud. Yeah. So even during development, you have to secure your stuff.
Now, Firebase has good tools for that. Is there a baseline strategy for securing your app? I know that that might be a step that a lot of people who are experimenting with Firebase might not think about right off the bat.
Yeah, probably the first thing to do is to go to the rules and set a read-write rule on all documents that a user has to be logged in. If you haven't set up login for anyone else, then that's just you. If you have set up login for other people, you can also say the only person who can read and write is you by putting in your user ID or email or display name or something. And then when you are actually ready to deploy to prod, you can set more granular rules for users being able to do their own stuff.
Any other tips or tricks that you have for someone who's looking to move their development experience into the cloud?
Like if you're just trying stuff out, think about possible lock-in. There's no real lock-in with Amazon Cloud9 because anytime you want to get out, you can just git push your code and then shut down the whole instance. Firebase is harder to get out of because it's got its unique way of storing data. So you can export it, but then you have to figure out a way to import it to the new thing you want to use. Also, as far as getting out of Firebase, so you have a limit of projects on the free account, which is 8, I think. And when you hit your cap, you might think you just delete a project and then start a new one. But it actually takes 30 days to actually really, really delete it.
Really?
Because it's some kind of Google Cloud policy. When you delete one of the Amazon Cloud9 instances, it's gone the moment you say you want it gone.
Okay.
So.
Good to know.
Yeah.
So you can't fill up that block at 8 and then just kind of hot swap them.
Yeah, this is something I figured out as I got very close to the actual presentation, is they warned me that my quota was getting full, and I was like, I didn't know I had a quota, and I tried to delete some, and they didn't go. They said, it'll be gone in 30 days.
Gosh, so did you have to repurpose one of the ones you already
had?
Yeah,
so I was like, I got to reuse one of the old ones every time I practice then.
Oh, crazy. What do you recommend for people who are trying to find a project that they want to work on in their spare time, but maybe are coming up short with inspiration?
Yeah, I mean, I never have trouble coming up with projects because I'm just one of those people who's always coming up with crazy ideas and not executing them. So I have the opposite problem.
Yeah.
I just don't have time. But most of my inspiration comes from solving problems in my life. Not the to-do app, obviously, but I guess that kind of came from solving a problem. Like I saw people complaining about how boring to-do apps are, and I was like, that's not a problem. I can fix that. But I recently built a forum for a bunch of friends of mine that we've been online on this comedy website forum since 2003. And the personal part of the forums is shutting down. So I wanted to build a forum for everybody to go to by the end of this month. And everybody was talking about migrating to Reddit or this or that. And I was like, no, I can do it. I promise. I'm going to do it in React. It's going to be so easy. It wasn't so easy, but I did it.
Nice.
So, and then another app idea I had. I had this problem with friends. I have a lot of old friends that they're really good friends and I want to keep in touch with them. But we have kids. We don't have time. We live far apart. So we don't really see each other or talk to each other more than once or twice a year. But I want to make sure it doesn't turn into 2 years or 3 years.
Yeah.
So obviously for that length of time, setting up Google Calendar reminders or something is probably not the way to go. So I set up an app where it's basically like on the surface, it's an address book. You have a list of all your friends you want to maintain contact with. And then you set up rotations for, I want to make sure that I text this friend once a week or that I call my friend twice a year. And then when the time comes, it'll remind you. And then it also lets you track important details about them, like their kids' names or their relationship status. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if it's been a couple of years, you don't remember their kids' names or how old they are. So now it'll tell you that their kid, Joe, is 5, and you can be like, oh, is Joe starting kindergarten?
I need this in my life.
Yeah, so I wanted to build that. And I wanted to build it mobile on React Native, which is maybe too ambitious. But so I haven't finished that yet. But yeah, it's just problems I noticed in my life. And then yeah. I was like, there's an app for that, or there should be.
Should be an app for yeah. that. Well, what projects and people are doing work that you're excited to track with over the next kind of weeks, months, and years?
One thing that seems really interesting is GraphQL, which reminds me a lot of Firebase.
Yeah.
In how you query the server. It's much more intuitive than your standard REST query. I've always wanted to use it. It seems really easy to use on the client side and really tricky to set up on the server side.
Awesome. Any parting wisdom for us?
Yeah. If you have any great ideas for an app that you think should exist, no matter how dumb it is, you know, go ahead and do it, because you see how easy this workflow is. It costs you very little. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't work out, just throw it away and never tell anyone about it. But you can try it out in like half an hour.
Awesome. Well, Christina Holland, thank you so much for sitting with me, telling us how we can move our developer experience into the cloud. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
This has been episode 30 of React Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. For notes to the people, projects, and things mentioned in this episode, visit reactpodcast.com/30. As I mentioned last week, we're doing another season of React.Holiday. It's a 25-day course in React starting December 1st and will be great for beginners, but also an awesome opportunity for you to learn hooks and suspense. We've already got hundreds of people on the list, but it'll be way more fun if you're there to enjoy it with us. So go to react.holiday and sign up for the newsletter. As always, thank you so much for listening. We'll be in your ears again next week with an amazing episode with Ryan Florence.